Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Good morning, my friend. Did you think I was not going to give you an episode because it's a bank holiday Monday? Well, you were wrong. It is me and Carl today bringing you the news catch up. I hope you're feeling good. I hope you had a good weekend. What did I do over the weekend? I did loads of stuff with my kids, and then I went to Culture Club, Mother's Culture Club, obviously as discussed on the podcast on Saturday, which was really fun. It's just so fun to go and like mess around in Collins Barracks, basically. Loads of bopping. Saoirse, if you listen to Saoirse on the podcast last week, her set was amazing. I really loved it. I'm dying to go and see her again. I love when you go and see an electronic music DJ who kind of mixes it up a little bit. Sometimes I think a set can be a bit samey, especially these days now that techno's so massive. I'm not a big techno girly. I prefer house music. And when you get a mix, like she played some Nintendo music in the middle of her set and then she put a beat on it and it was incredible. I really, really loved it. Also loved Elaine May's set at the end. Herself and May Kay did Princess Perfect Exceeder. Princess Superstar sang on it and May Kay did it perfectly and Elaine mixed it all together beautifully. It was really good. Loads and loads of fun. I'm actually sad it's over. Already looking forward to next year's. But yeah, other than that, it's been a lovely family weekend. I'm about to go and see Kung Fu Panda 4. It's all rock and roll, my friends. Now though, I might as well just get going and get into it. I hope you enjoy getting caught up on the news. Please do stick around for a story about Pierce Brosnan getting into trouble in Yellowstone National Park at the end. It's worth it. Carl Kinsella, good morning. Here in Dublin, it is a bank holiday and therefore my children are in the house. So I feel I need to warn people there may be some interjections. I have told them not to, but as people familiar with children may know, that doesn't always work out. But it is not a bank holiday in Amsterdam, but it does look sunny there though, Carl. No.
I'm in like the opposite situation in that I've rented a room in the library. So I'm currently in like a little study space here.
Oh.
Which is, I feel like that's the opposite of having children distracting you.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
But it is, yeah, it is really sunny here. And the lighting in this room is really good.
Yeah.
If anything, it's maybe too good. I feel like I can see too much of my face on screen here.
Yeah. I know what you mean. You almost need to be like completely, like there's a level of lighting where things are too crisp. And then if you can amp it up slightly, then it's better. It's almost so bright that you can't see any details. That's what I would recommend personally. But, you know, hey ho, you can't control the sun. Okay, well, we've got lots to talk about, so we might as well get stuck in. And I think we should start with a story that has really gotten the attention of lots of Irish people, and rightfully so. And this is the story of the people who were camping down outside the IPO office, who were then moved over the course of the last few days. We've talked about this briefly before, but things have really ramped up.
Well, that's, we've certainly talked about, and I think, you know, kind of most people who cover Irish current affairs will have talked about in the last couple of years, the sort of mounting pressures that have come from, you know, people staying in tents or sleeping rough as a result of the government not being able to provide suitable accommodation. Mm. And it does seem to have hit a whole new low this weekend. So what happened was kind of on Saturday morning, you know, you had sort of diggers and industrial movers kind of come along and get rid of these tents. These men, without any warning, about 150 of them, were put on a bus to Saggart. Crookling was the specific name of the accommodation they were taken to. Mm. This is accommodation. So they were moved out of Mount Street in town, moved to kind of, I mean, no disrespect to Saggart, but I mean, compared to Mount Street, you could call it the middle of nowhere. You know, yeah. you don't have the same access to services and amenities. And but I mean, already the situation was so dire. Even at Mount Street, there were no bathrooms, there were no showers, there was no access to essential things that, you know, you need for, you know, just to feel like a human. So they've been moved to Crookling. This was done very unceremoniously in a way that I think is kind of unfamiliar and very unpleasant to Irish people. I think unpalatable. People were really shocked. You know, you're looking at tents being slashed. You know, these are people who are already fleeing persecution. So, I mean, for them to come here and to for them to be treated this way, you know, the idea that we don't have 150 rooms across the entire country, you know, with 166,000 derelict properties, you know, the idea that we can't, you know, do any better than these extremely makeshift situations is beyond the pale to me. But I think
Well, I was just going to say, like, I think, you know, first of all, living in tents is unacceptable. Like, it's not an okay way to treat people, particularly vulnerable people who've come to this country from usually dire circumstances. And, you know, we were already upset by the fact that there were so many people living in tents in this in these circumstances. Obviously, we talked about it with the cold weather. It was, you know, very worrying. And but they had built a kind of community there. And, you know, even though the resources weren't good, it was what they knew. So to have all that ripped away from them, like, very abruptly, and, you know, it didn't seem like, it seemed like they were kind of being misled. Like, there were reports that they, that what they thought anyway was that they were being brought to kind of actual, you know, inside accommodation. And then that wasn't the case. And then to find themselves, as you say, far outside the city center, you know, in a place that's completely unfamiliar to them is.
And still just with tents, still, you know, still.
And still tents, with, you know, exactly. So
not
like
four walls and a roof over your head. You know, I saw one line that said, you know, they were driven to Saggart and they were invited to set up their tents there. And I was like, you know, invited is such a warm and friendly word to use in such a situation like this. It's, and, you know, we've seen kind of that these men, as soon as they arrived at Crookling in Saggart, they were accosted by protesters. Because this is an area, this building in Saggart, the facilities, they have been targeted previously. Like, there was an arson back there in January. So you have, you know, Minister for Integration Roderick O'Gorman this week coming out and saying that, like, it's much safer for them to be there than in Mount Street. But I think people would probably raise their eyebrows at that, because, you know, you're kind of away from the scrutiny of, you know, if you've got something outside the International Protection Office, it's very unlikely to be targeted as part of an arson attack because it's too central and too visible. But, you know, somewhere like this, kind of on the side of the mountains in Dublin, you know, you're really running a high risk of these people being sort of targeted by, you know, elements that we've seen are active for the last 18 months. You know, there's been so many arson attacks, you know, if you, but I mean, they've said now, the IPO, they do have supposedly kind of a guard 24/7, so kind of permanent monitoring. So, you know, you'd cross your fingers that at least no more harm would come to these people. But the fact is, I think I saw a report, at least 25 already had made their way back to the IPO. Because, of course, you know, why, how could you possibly sustain subsist, I don't know, how could you possibly live on the side of the mountain in a tent, you know, with these poor facilities? You know, I can understand the logic of just wanting to be close to where the decision is made, and you know, the, like, wanting to be close to the IPO so you can have access to information and, you know, kind of access to the system. I think, you know, and the images just were so striking. I think it will probably remind people of the arson attack that happened on Sandwith Street last year. Like, I just think the visuals of these people who all they have is their tents. You know, a lot of them are celebrating Ramadan right now. So they've just got these kind of a very paltry amount of sort of groceries and things to subsist on. So, like, obviously these are not people who are high flying in society. You know, this is a very difficult situation for people who, these people are deprived, and yet we're kind of taking away what little they have. You know, to see tents slashed, and to see things discarded like that. And, you know, and just to see people, as you say, sort of misled, you know, it sort of feels like we're kind of throwing a blindfold on them and tossing them on a bus and kind of leaving them to fend for themselves in this entirely new country with this language they might not speak, with this complete lack of access to information as to what's going to happen to them next. Mm. And so I think it really was very stark. And I know the point was made that this weekend was Paddy's Day, and that maybe, you know, people kind of speculated that the tents were being moved out of sight, which is something that you see in cities like San Francisco and other cities with major homelessness problems. Which is where, you know, nothing is actually done to deal with the root cause, but aesthetically, you know, people get moved around and shuffled around so the tourists never have to deal with them and high earners never have to look at them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it felt to a lot of people. Of course, that was denied by Roderick O'Gorman, but, you know, I think it's hard for people to shake that feeling.
Absolutely. I don't know. There was something about like the line in the journal article that I read that said Roderick O'Gorman, who is currently in Japan as part of St. Patrick's Day celebrations, denied this was the case.
Yeah.
It's like there's something even jarring about that line that, like, you know, you're off. And I understand that St. Patrick's Day is important for diplomatic relations and all the rest. But like, it's just kind of gross. It just doesn't sit very, you know, easily with most of us, I think, who find this extremely concerning. And like, I saw someone who has been volunteering with to try and support these men say that an extra challenge for them now is that when they were in the city centre, they could walk to the mosque, which was important. That access was important for the people who are celebrating Ramadan or celebrating anyway. Doing Ramadan at the moment. I'm not an expert in Islam by any stretch of the imagination.
I think you celebrate Ramadan.
Yeah, right. I think so. But they now can't access a mosque from Crooksling. You know, it's just like, it just feels like there's no joined up thinking. I don't really know how they thought they were going to get away with it. But I suppose in a way they have gotten away with it. But, you know, people are rightly very angry. And, you know, that's good to see.
I think for me, what it boils down to is, you know, it's so well established at this point that we have so many vacant properties in Ireland. And the fact that we can't put together a strategy, in order to make sure that everybody is housed, you know, and because, I mean, the conditions that you see, you know, you're talking about tents on the side of the street, you know, any shelter would be preferable. So, and it is crazy that we can't provide that because, I mean, it's 150 people. It's not actually that many people, you know. This really seems like something that one of the wealthiest countries in the world should be able to address.
Every time I hear that, I just roll my eyes. One of the wealthiest countries in the world.
Yeah.
And look how we're treating people. It's appalling.
Precisely.
Okay, let's stay kind of, I suppose, with the St. Patrick's Day, because obviously they were out in full force all over the world. And Taoiseach Leo Varadkar was in Washington, D.C. visiting Joe Biden, which I know a lot of people found uncomfortable given the current circumstances. There was a lot of conversation around whether he was going to say anything, you know, to Joe Biden about the current genocide that's happening in Gaza. I suppose what I think people kind of wanted almost like a Love Actually kind of confrontation, you know, but that didn't really happen. Doesn't seem like it, right?
No, and I think obviously to some extent people will have to like kind of watch the speech and read the comments and sort of make their minds up for themselves. But yeah, I certainly was no Love Actually moment. There was no sort of change in Ireland's relationship with the US, you know. I think Sally Rooney wrote very well about this in the Irish Times at the weekend. I'm kind of bringing that up as if, you know, there's so like as if I'm the only one who has read this Sally Rooney article. I would imagine that everybody has probably read it at this point. But yeah, she wrote with you know, incredible clarity around Ireland's attitude towards America, and it's this idea that we're all friends, you know, and that we're actually making this good faith attempt to try and convince the United States to stop supporting Israel. But in actual fact, the United States is not going to listen to us. They're not going to be swayed by us. So all of the diplomacy, you know, in a way, it kind of falls flat at the very first hurdle. That being said, Leo Varadkar, he did, like, you know, at the Shamrock ceremony where the bowl is passed over, he did raise the issue, and he said the Irish people are deeply troubled about the catastrophe that's unfolding in Gaza. And, you know, he gave kind of a story as to why Irish people see their own struggles for sovereignty reflected in the struggle for freedom in Palestine. You know, and it was kind of, you know, it's good to see that story told in a way that American journalists will pick up on it and maybe have a better understanding of why Ireland is so emphatically pro-Palestine. But yeah, I think, you know, Sally Rooney covered it very, very well in her article. Like, there's nothing kind of we can say. And even, you know, even if there was something we could do or some kind of striking protest we could make, there was no striking protest made. It was just Leo Varadkar setting out his stall. It sort of reminded me of Enda Kenny's first visit to Trump, where he gave a kind of a strong speech with sort of a metaphorical bent. It was kind of like an old story about Irish migration and stuff, and this kind of felt similar, where it was like giving this Irish perspective and kind of talking about the Irish spirituality of why we would support Palestine, but no actual, you know, grounded, forceful, you know, act that you could actually say where, oh, we actually took a stand. You know, there was no calling out of Joe Biden, no suggesting that Joe Biden is doing the wrong thing. Because, I mean, Leo Varadkar was kind of quick to highlight that Joe Biden has agreed that, you know, we need a quote unquote ceasefire. What that means to Joe Biden could obviously mean something very different to what it means to you and me. So the whole thing, you know, you hate to kind of look at it and say, oh, what a wasted trip. But certainly in respect to Gaza, you know, you don't feel like we've accomplished very much. You know, Leo Varadkar has been able to go there and do what he said he was going to do. He's raised it. He can say that that box is ticked. You know, he's done that perfectly well. But I mean, there's certainly been no sort of earth shattering, you know, statement or remark that will kind of change the face of Irish-US relations.
Well, I mean, I certainly didn't expect that to happen. I don't think that many people really believed that that would happen. But, you know, it was nice to think for a moment that perhaps it might happen. Let's stay with Gaza, because where are things at the moment?
Yeah, so we've had like a reopening of ceasefire talks, or at least a kind of steps towards reopening ceasefire talks. But I mean, all in all, things are as bad as they were a week ago. I saw some horrendous footage this week of a man, you know, kind of almost self-reporting the annihilation of his own neighborhood. The bombs were falling and he was speaking to camera. So, I mean, we are no closer to anything even sort of remotely resembling peace or safety or anything like that. We've just got, you know, all we've got is the chance that we might be able to return to the diplomatic table. And that's obviously organized kind of by Qatar and Egypt. And unfortunately, yeah, there's, you know, we've had these talks before and maybe we are inching closer to a resolution, but, you know, it's we're still in a position where, you know, dozens of Gazans are dying every single day. And it is just nightmarish. It's, and you kind of had, just to go back briefly to Leo Varadkar, like he kind of, he spoke about needing to tailor his message while he was in the US, which I thought was kind of a very Varadkar thing to say, which is this idea of like, okay, I'm no longer on Irish soil, I'm on American soil, so I need to switch up the way that I deliver this message. And, you know, he kind of acknowledged, he said that he wasn't weak on it, and he, I think he, but he acknowledged that he had, you know, changed his tone. And you do just wonder, like, what's the point? You know, like, if you're willing to kind of be braver about this in Ireland, just, you know, just see what happens.
You know,
Americans are not going to stop visiting Killarney. They're not going to stop getting their picture taken at the feckin' cliffs of Moher. You know, the Irish cultural cachet, I think, has never been stronger. Like, if you look at Cillian Murphy winning the Oscar, if you look at Kneecap on Jimmy Fallon or whichever one of the Jimmy shows they were on, you know, like, the Irish cultural power is so strong at the minute. And it's a shame to not use that, I think, for a bit more of an emphatic stand.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I thought, just staying with Leo Varadkar, I see when he was in America, he was questioned by journalists about some of the comments by Willie O'Dea saying that the, you know, Fianna Fáil needs to get back to basics and stop playing to the woke gallery, as we discussed, and that Leo Varadkar said he does not identify as woke. Like, this whole thing is just, I mean, honestly, it makes me want to slam my head into the wall. Like, it's so ridiculous. Like, he's like, asked if he considered himself to be woke, he said, "I don't think so, but I've never really been fully sure of what woke and anti-woke means. People who say they're anti-woke just seem to be against whatever new idea or new concept is popular at the time. But no is the short answer." So what are you talking about then? Being like this...
That's woke.
Oh.
Once the word woke comes up, like, it's just like talking, you know, it's like gibberish. It's like being in like a Lewis Carroll. It's like being in Alice in Wonderland.
Yes.
And you're just trying to like deal with all these fake definite, like, you know, Willie O'Dea talking about not playing to the woke gallery, but instead to focus on healthcare and housing. It's like, the woke people love healthcare and housing. Like, we would kill if you would focus on healthcare and housing.
Honestly, like, please do that. That's pretty much, you know, the main thing that we want. Like, is like, yeah. I just, it's so frustrating because, like, what does be okay? First of all, woke has been, I mean, it's lost all meaning as discussed, but like as a concept, as a phrase, it has been taken from African American culture, first of all. So it doesn't even belong to us. And the reason that it came here is because people who are conservative, who don't like the idea of progressive ideals, latched onto it from conservative people in America who were using it as an insult. So that's how it came here. It came here as an insult, adopted by people who wanted to slag off progressive people. Like, so really what you're talking about is progressive people when you talk about woke people, and you're talking about people who honestly just want to be a bit sound, just want most people to be okay and want people to be reasonably happy. Like, in this idea that it becomes this kind of political talking point is just so frustrating and ridiculous.
That's honestly, when Willie O'Dea brought it up in his tweet, because I addressed this a bit in last weekend's Cerealing in the Years, but honestly, I was going to devote like three paragraphs just begging Willie O'Dea not to do this. You know, like, just this introduction of woke into the Irish political lexicon, because we've seen what it's done in the UK. Like, in the UK, it's all they talk about. You know, they have a special minister for woke. I couldn't tolerate that happening in Ireland. I honestly could not stomach it.
No.
You know, if we were to become that stupid.
Yeah.
So I think we just need to sack off. I need to send Willie O'Dea like a
cease and
really
desist,
heartfelt letter. Yeah, please just don't do this.
I know.
We can solve all of our problems without just going down this route of just utter, you know, like,
well, like, do we want whatever to be taking language from Trump supporting QAnon members? Or do we not? Like, that's what we're talking about here. Do we want to start talking about politics in the same way that those people do? I certainly do not. Because it just makes everything so needlessly adversarial. It drives me mental.
How are you supposed to talk to anyone on a level if you are insisting on using these nebulous, you know, terms that nobody truly agrees upon?
Yeah.
And just, as you say, they're only used for division and they're only used to separate people.
Yeah.
And you know, you'd have to hope that people in Limerick would see right through that. And hopefully people at large, you have to kind of hope that there's a reason that these kind of dumb discussions about woke haven't come here yet. And you have to hope that we as a people are about to kind of come into our own and shut this down and start talking about these things intelligently.
Yeah. Do you know what though, Carl? Like, I worry about that because I remember thinking, you know, we don't have the same issues with the far right as other European countries have. Like, hopefully we'll be smarter than that. And now I'm starting to think that that's not the case. And then I remember thinking, we don't have the same issues around kind of gender critical, I'm using big, massive air quotes around that phrase. We don't have the same issues with transphobia in Ireland. Like, I remember there was a major kind of figure in the kind of transphobic circle was coming to Ireland, and a group of Irish feminists wrote a letter basically saying, we don't want this in Ireland. Like, we don't want this conversation. We don't welcome it. And now that's growing massively here. Like, I think one of the tragedies of us as a people, and I hope I don't upset people by saying this, but is that we do seem to co-opt other people's fights in this era of the internet, you know? And I think that most people, or a lot of people, are totally reasonable and don't buy into that stuff. But the more it is bought into by the media and by the people who are talking and the politicians, the more it becomes an idea that people grasp onto. And then next thing you know, we actually do have a far right political party, and we are just like every other country in Europe.
Yeah, and you can see it in the way that the priorities of Irish voters have changed. Like, with when they do, you know, Ipsos MRBI polls, now people care so much more about immigration.
Yeah.
You know, like, immigration has not changed drastically in the last 2 years. Obviously, it changed drastically when the Ukraine war kicked off.
Yeah.
But I mean, for the last, you know, while, things haven't changed dramatically. Mm. And like, the idea that these things are just becoming more like, it feels very artificial. It doesn't feel like these are natural concerns that people have. Mm. It feels like it's just as a result of a fear mongering campaign.
Mm.
And yeah, it is down to the media not to play into it. It's certainly down to TDs to not play into it.
Yeah, big time. And,
yeah, big time. We all just kind of have to do our best to stay normal and stay defined.
And I think it's very unfortunate that we live in an era of media where everyone's in a big panic, because obviously things have become much more difficult for media organizations to kind of exist. And so therefore, you know, they need to think about things like clicks in order to exist. And therefore, divisive, you know, partisan kind of arguments are the stuff that often brings in the money for them. So it is a difficult time, and I totally accept that for media organizations, but we have to be very careful about what we let happen to our society. And I think, like, even, you know, when you think about the immigration thing, that all of a sudden that's become, you know, a kind of hot button issue for a lot of people, I feel like, you know, we as a country, we're pretty much all in the same boat when it comes to what's happening in Gaza. Like, we seem to be quite agreed on our position on that. But I read over the weekend that one of the guys who was outside the IPO office, IPO? As I said that, I was like, is that correct? Yeah. Sorry, my brain. It's a bank holiday Monday morning. My brain is not functioning at the highest level. But one of the guys was Palestinian. And the reason that he was in Ireland is he made Ireland his destination because he had read so much about how supportive Irish people were for Palestinians and for Palestine. And so he came here on that basis. And you have to wonder if the people who are so anti-immigration, are they also as quote unquote patriots, you know, pro-Palestine? But then where do you stand when someone who comes from Gaza to Ireland to seek protection? Like, do you, you know, can you marry those two ideals? I don't know. Like, it's such a bizarre climate that we're living in, really, with political ideals and communications and media. Anyway, that should probably be an opinion column rather than me going on a big rant on this this podcast. Okay, let's reel it back in. We mentioned Leah Varadkar, obviously, in DC. Roger O'Gorman was in Japan. Catherine Martin went to Texas to South by Southwest, despite the fact that all the Irish acts pulled out. This one I will never get my head around.
It makes me think of, like, a school teacher on a school trip, but all the kids have run off. Like, that's how I picture it. Like, and Catherine Martin is just scrambling around Texas looking for all these, you know, mid-20s popular Irish indie music acts. But yeah, like, you know, everybody pulled out. I mean, this is, you know, Kneecap kind of kicked it off. Kneecap pulled out. I think this actually happened in the last week, so I don't think we discussed this last week.
I think it had started. Crazy. I feel like it had started, or maybe it was, we talked about it in the entertainment segment. But yeah, it certainly was not at the stage that it ended up when we discussed it last week.
Yeah, no. So it was Kneecap, and they were followed kind of by everybody.
Yeah.
The entire Music for Ireland night, and also two other artists from Northern Ireland, but that included like Gavin James, Sprints, you know, some pretty big names. So it was a really, really impressive. We talked earlier on about making a stand. You know, these guys, they took this decision probably at a huge financial and opportunity cost to themselves. And, you know, that's what solidarity is, you know, when you actually make some degree of sacrifice in order to, you know, show that you care about an issue or that you care about, you know, a certain cohort of people. So yeah, it was really impressive. I think everybody, you know, is really should kind of, you know, if there's any way that you can support these bands, like buying their record or anything like that, you know, I'm sure they'd appreciate it, because I'm sure they're out some money now after this. Oh, but yeah, Catherine Martin, Minister for Culture, she decided to attend South by Southwest anyway. She said that she you know, still felt revulsion at what's happening in Gaza. And the reason, sorry, by the way, that everybody pulled out, and the listeners will probably know this, is because of the US Army and the company that used to be known as Raytheon Weapons Company. They sponsor, they're super sponsors of South by Southwest. But Catherine Martin, yeah, she attended a panel. She was there to talk about, I think, the universal basic income for artists. So she didn't pull out, which is kind of, that's sort of the Irish approach right now in the US, is to complain a lot but not actually pull out, not actually sort of change the dynamic of what you're part of. So yeah, Catherine Martin was there at South by Southwest, despite the fact that, yeah, no. And, you know, the Irish artists were told never to come back by Governor Greg Abbott, which is a nice touch. You know,
But that's even part of it. So as like, you know, Catherine Martin, what's her title? She's Minister for Media, Culture, Art. Yeah, she's got a big portfolio, for want of a better term. Yeah. But like the fact even that the governor of Texas would say, you know, basically don't come back to all the Irish artists who decided not to come. And then she would go anyway. Like, would she not, even just on the basis of the fact that this guy said don't come here, you know, even for the artists who she apparently represents, would she not have taken a stand? It's very difficult to get your head around. I understand that diplomacy is okay, but like, you know, you can pull out of these things.
Yeah, I think it kind of, it shows like a lack of pride or something. You know,
it feels really kind of spineless.
Yeah, I think we clearly think of ourselves on the global scale. I think in our dealings with the EU and our dealings with the US, we really just portray ourselves as this kind of younger brother character who, you know, you can push us around and we'll still kind of love you, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it is just, I think to people back home, we look a bit like lapdogs. And it's particularly at a time when there really is something to fight for and there really is something taking a stand about. The fact that we kind of have kept it relatively business as usual, I think, is a disappointment to most people.
Yeah.
Attending South by Southwest, it's like, what are we even gaining from that, realistically?
Nothing.
Like, what kind of relationship do we need with the events organizers of Texas, you know?
Yeah, like, I mean, whatever about going to DC, and, you know, I understand you can argue that there's a, you know, political merit in doing that, but like going to South by Southwest, come on.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
We've got a few stories to kind of touch on relatively quickly before I let you go. And the first one is, I thought this was really sad to read, that many families are going into debt to cover the cost of funerals.
Yeah, this was shocking. I wasn't aware of this until I saw the report this week. Thankfully, touch wood, I've never really had to organize a funeral or anything like that. But yeah, like, you know, we've got people paying, I think, somewhere between $4,000 and $10,000. For funerals. And this is like, I mean, as the St. Vincent de Paul say, like, oftentimes when you're forced to organize a funeral, it's not something that you've had a chance to plan for a very long time. These things can be very sudden. And yeah, like, I think once you actually think about it, you think about the cost associated with funerals. Yeah, like, there's no way Irish families would be able to pay that out of pocket. So it actually, you know, so it kind of almost, it's so obvious that this would be happening. But yeah, so what the St. Vincent de Paul have said is that there's actually a community welfare service provided by the government. This is something, again, that I wasn't aware of, but you can have, like, you can apply, and there's increasingly these applications are being accepted for, like, the state to cover the full cost of a burial or to cover partial costs. So, like, there's been 246 of those requests this year. The department paid out 9 million euro for this purpose last year. So, like, this is something that is available to people, and the kind of thing that I think probably if more people knew about it, more people would make use of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think it really goes to show the sort of state we're in cost of living wise.
Yeah.
That, I mean, funerals are absolutely taking people to the cleaners. And I think, yeah, when you think about it in terms like that, it is particularly sad.
Yeah. And I mean, it is like, I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it was just to make sure that people knew that, you know, that was there. Obviously, there's a threshold, like an income threshold and stuff. It's available for people who really need it. But, you know, the St. Vincent de Paul's head of social justice, Dr. Tricia Keelty, said that there were people going into debt to pay for funerals and then really struggling to kind of keep themselves on the straight and narrow and, you know, who turned to kind of high cost money lenders, which obviously seems like, you know, will save your bacon. You obviously, you know, with a funeral, you feel like you have to, you know, do a good send off. It's not for you, it's for your loved one. So you don't feel like you can cut corners maybe, and therefore you may find yourself in desperate stakes and turn to someone who isn't going to lend you money at the best rates or whatever. And then you can end up in trouble. And that's, you know, heartbreaking to think about. So I think it is good that people know that, first of all, how expensive these things are. Second of all, that there is support there if they need it. But there will be lots of people who will fall between the threshold, though, and, you know, the extra money that you would need for something like this. Like, not everybody has thousands of euro in savings these days. Not even close.
Yeah, and like, even the people who do, say, for example, you just have that exact amount, even if you don't necessarily go into debt, it's still just an enormous chunk, you know, like, there's no way the average person can fork over 4,000 euro at short notice. So it is, and that's kind of the lower.
I was just going to say, yeah, that's the kind of low side, yeah.
Yeah,
so I suppose if you find yourself in that situation, it's worth contacting St. Vincent de Paul or indeed your local welfare office and see if they can offer you some support. But it's just like, I mean, obviously you're in the worst possible circumstances at that time anyway. It's awful to think about. Okay, let's talk about pornography because unfortunately it's something we need to talk about more, in my opinion. The ESRI have done some research into young men's use of online porn, and unsurprisingly, loads of them are using it, viewing it, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, this is part of the Growing Up in Ireland study, which is like a longitudinal study, which means that like people, it's the same people being studied, being asked questions, the same questions or progressive questions, just kind of at different stages in their life. So this particular cohort, it's the 98 cohort, 1998. So these boys they've been kind of asked questions at 9 years, 13 years, 17 years, 20 years. But yeah, the most recent round of questions has revealed that 64% of young men in Ireland are using pornography, and that, yeah, like the ones who report using pornography tend to be less happy. Which I think if you know, you're saying, you know, we should talk more about pornography, I think it should come probably as no surprise to anyone who pays close attention to the effects of pornography on people, that anyone who is kind of like a serial user of pornography, I think there does tend to be quite a high correlation with, you know, other unfortunate things like, say, depression, like, you know, lack of earning, you know, all that kind of thing. It's sort of it's a dangerous position to be in. And as we see, a lot of young men are affected, 2/3, really. And to kind of show you how out of kilter that is, you know, the figure for women, young women, is just 13%. So it's nowhere close. You know, 13, that's, you know, it's almost 1 in 10. Whereas, you know, with young men, it's 2 in 3. So it's a completely different world, almost. Yeah.
And there's loads of research. I mean, aside from, you know, the general impact on your happiness and stuff like that, there's loads of research about the negative impact it has on people's sexuality and their ability to kind of, you know, have satisfactory, consensual, mutually beneficial sex. You know, I'm not like anti-porn, but I think, you know, we need to be very careful. We need to be talking about it. Richie Sadler did a really good program with RT. I mean, he talks about this all the time because he does so much great work with young people. You know, and there's just no denying that porn is really bad when used to excess at that developmental stage. I thought it was interesting to see that key findings include that men from more advantaged backgrounds are more likely to use pornography, that porn use is lower among those with a religious affiliation. I mean, that's not surprising. And where there is greater parental monitoring of behavior in adolescence, not surprising. Men from single parent households are less likely to use pornography, while females from single parent households are more likely to use it. Isn't that interesting?
It is all interesting. It's the kind of thing that I feel like it requires, like, you'd need to really pull apart the data to see how closely related these things are.
Yeah.
Because as you say, some of them are surprising. Mm. So I'd love to actually learn a bit more about, you know, the relationships between these different data points. But it is interesting. It is, as you say, a few of those things are surprising. You wouldn't think that things like single parent household would necessarily impact.
That it would have the opposite impact on boys and girls is the bit that I find interesting.
The kind of thing that across the, like, you know, we should absolutely have, you know, comprehensive sexual education, and part of that should be about porn consumption habits, you know,
1,000,000%. And the potential impact of excess porn on you and your general happiness. I totally agree. And then finally, I don't know, there's just something about this that gave me a real kind of lol. Pierce Brosnan got in trouble.
Yeah, so Pierce, I love this, right? Because Pierce Brosnan got a €460 fine for wandering off at Yellowstone National Park, which I just think is pure. I like to imagine that he had his James Bond tux on when he was doing it, just like doing like little spy moves and stuff. For those of you who can't see, I'm holding up fake finger guns right now. But yeah, I love this. I was in Yellowstone 2 years ago, and wandering off is actually. It was one of the best experiences of my life, but wandering off is really dangerous. Like, they have like bears, they have thermal springs. Like, if you step in the wrong kind of puddle of water, it could eat the skin right off your bones with the heat of the water. So it's incredible that Pierce Brosnan didn't come to any more harm.
And I presume it's like you're well informed that like you have to stay.
But you can go by yourself. You know, like I did a tour because I'm a scaredy cat. I'm not self-sufficient like Pierce Brosnan. Mm-hmm. But like Pierce Brosnan probably just like drove there himself. You know what I mean? He was probably just hanging out.
What are you talking about? He probably hitchhiked there.
Totally. Yeah.
I gotta live off the land.
Or like airdropped it in from like a Learjet.
Yeah. So he posted photos of himself in an area of Yellowstone, which, you know, he was not supposed to visit. And as you say, it was a thermal area that he went into that he wasn't supposed to. Old Faithful obviously is a geyser. I can't remember in America what we used to call it, but anyway, which is like one of the, like it's a thing that can erupt, like burst hot water out of the ground. So yeah, you know, you don't want to accidentally get burned alive by boiling water, which is coming from the center of our molten planet. So he posted the photo. I feel like posting the photo, he obviously genuinely didn't realize that he'd gone into an area that he wasn't supposed to. He said it was an impulsive mistake and that he did not see the no trespassing sign posted in that area.
Impulsive mistake makes him sound like a squirrel. Like he saw something shiny or pretty and he wanted to like chase after it and go. I think we can tell, like, because the fine is only €460, I think we must know that his offense wasn't too grievous. And he seems very sorry.
Yeah, he's also 70.
Yeah.
Like,
no, I say we forgive Pierce Brosnan for this.
I agree. I mean, 70, by the way, I'm not implying that 70 is very old. Like, I think 70 is actually quite young in 2024. But I mean, you know, let's give this man, let's forgive him. Let's let it go.
For sure.
But I do like the idea of him kind of barreling around Yellowstone, just like doing what he wants, because he's Pierce Brosnan. He can do whatever he wants. He's James Bond, for God's sake. And he is, of course, one of our own. So we need to always keep note of what he's doing. Well, Carl, thank you so much. Happy bank holiday to you. I'm sorry you don't get a day off, but good luck with your studies. Are things kind of ramping up for you now that we're in the spring with your master's?
Ramping up in a big way. Yeah. I have like a stressful day ahead of me.
Oh, no,
I'm sorry. Send prayers.
I will. Thoughts and prayers are with you, and we know they solve all problems. Okay, thank you so much, Carl. Have a good one. By the way, you can read Carl's brilliant column, Surrealing in the Years, on thejournal.ie every week, and you can find him on the usual social media platforms. Let's see, can I do this? Carl.Kinsella on Instagram, correct?
Yep.
He is TV's Carl Kinsella on the platform formerly known as Twitter. And are we still talking about Threads? I feel like Threads has died a death.
I'm not on Threads. Okay. I'm not even on there.
Grant. Yeah. Perfect. Well, have a great day, Carl.
Thanks, Louise. You too.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.